board meeting. There'll be a moment of silence. Please remain standing for Thomas Hawkins Jr. from the Department of Animal Services.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Thank you.
I didn't know you were down there, Rick.
We have a presentation tonight for the Child Support Awareness Month in Sansaw County. David?
Good evening, Chairman Mayfield, Supervisors, CEO Robinson, and Council Doring. Thank you for the opportunity to publicize and recognize Child Support Awareness Month. Who is or who are the Department of Child Support Services? We are part of Stanislaus County, not the state of California, part of the executive branch of government. Our client is the public interest and the county. We don't represent either parent or the children. We follow the law, we don't make the law. Oftentimes when our customers are unhappy, their only solution is to go to the federal legislature, Congress, or the state legislature. What do? We establish paternity and child support, and we enforce those orders. We do that for no fee. I want to stress that this is one of the few things that there is absolutely no fee other than your general federal and state tax dollar that you pay, but no direct fee. This is important because not too long ago, Phil Donahue had a segment on about a woman who had a child out of wedlock, and he was recommending that she needed to hire a private attorney in order to establish paternity and get a child support order. That is not true. That is what every county, in fact, every jurisdiction in the United States, including its territories, has a child support division that will establish paternity at no charge and get a child support order. What don't we do? We don't do anything else. We can't help with custody, visitation, dissolution, or property division. Why do we do it? Because it's the law, but more, because supporting your children is a fundamental obligation. Child support helps with those most fundamental needs, food, clothing, and shelter. Plus, it involves both parents in their child's life, and there are substantial benefits to that. What are those benefits? Lower rates of teenage pregnancy, reduced aggressive behavior. Those children are less likely to grow up in poverty. They have increased cognitive development, improved health, greater interaction with their peers, and higher education achievement. If a person willfully refuses to support their child, their children, we attempt to hold them responsible, hold them accountable. You'll hear more about this later in the Healthy Community presentation under accountability. How do we do that? Through partnerships. You'll also hear about this in the effective partnership presentation. But how specifically do we enforce child support orders? We garnish wages and many types of Social Security benefits. Garnishments are required by law. That's one of the most common questions we get is, why does my employer have to withhold that money? Because it's required by law. We also intercept unemployment, disability, workers' compensation benefits, tax refunds, and lottery winnings. Most recently, we intercepted for the people who owe child support, the economic stimulus checks. In addition, we record liens on real property interests, personal injury, in probate proceedings, and other lawsuits. We also suspend licenses. This includes driver's licenses, business licenses, attorney licenses, and doctor's licenses. We also prevent the issuance of passports or their renewal. We also can and do collect against retirement and deferred compensation funds, and we also initiate contempt actions for failure to obey court orders and failure to provide child support. How did we do? As a state, California provided child support services to about 1.7 million children. Except for public education, this is more than any other program providing services to unique customers. In Stanislaus County, we provide services to about 35,000 mothers, 35,000 fathers, and their children. California collected about $2.3 billion. Stanislaus County collected $47.5 million of that in the last fiscal year. Also, Stanislaus County has reached a major achievement, as has the state, in that we now have a statewide child support system, and the federal penalties are dead and gone. There will no longer be any seizure from the state, from the counties, to help pay for the federal penalties that we should have never had to pay for, since it was the state's failure to automate, not the counties. Last but not least, I wanted to make a plea to the legislature, to the governor, and to the child support customers. Child support can be part of the solution to the budget crisis. In direct recoupment, we reimburse taxpayers for public assistance that's paid, and as part of the safety net. We, child support, are part of the success of welfare reform. If child support was fully funded, it would be part of the budget solution. People who run a business know that they fund those areas that have a return on investment, the areas that are most profitable. This is one area that the state is being extremely short-sighted in cutting funding. The state doesn't seem to recognize that. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them or attempt to answer them.
Any questions of Dave? Okay, if not, I have a resolution up here. Who am I going to give this to, Dave?
All right, I'm going to come up and get it.
Are you the man? Okay.
But I won't take your name and address for the record sign.
Dave, on behalf of the board, I have this resolution up here. Do you want to talk again?
No.
Okay.
I've said enough.
Okay. Like I say, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but thank you for what you do in your group, okay?
Thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate all this from all the board members.
Okay.
I'm the CEO, Dr.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. This is the public comment period. Is there? I have one person wants to speak. Steve Madison.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and Board. I'm here in my role as the chair of the Salvation Army Shelter Committee. And while we ought not celebrate homelessness in our community, I wanted you to recognize a project where the community has really come together and done something to take care of our homeless population. You may be aware that the shelter facility at 329 D Street is under renovation presently and will reopen in November. Through state and federal funding, we've received $1 million from the state and approximately $500,000 from the VA to renovate the shelter facility. We've also received CDBG funding from the County of Stanislaus and the City of Modesto. With that money, we were able to replace a roof that was leaking and put in a 100-bed cold weather shelter, along with a transitional housing unit that will house approximately 32 homeless individuals. The transitional housing unit is funded by the VA, not only in the capital improvements to the facility, but through per diem rates for veterans who are staying at the facility. With the per diem rates, we're able to hire full-time staff at the shelter, who not only oversee the activities at the shelter, but will be able to direct veterans and other homeless individuals to medical care, dental care, counseling, and any other services that they need. I think that we're going to do the grand opening sometime in October, and all of you will be invited, but in case you couldn't be there, the Salvation Army asked me to come by and comment on what's going on. I think it's a remarkable project. We have a number of private donations, folks who wish to remain anonymous, not to mention the Barbarian family who gave title to the building to the Salvation Army, and without that building, we wouldn't be able to do it. I thank the Board of Supervisors and the county for their support, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions?
Just a clarification, Chairman. So, Steve, the new facility is going to be available for this coming season?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
And how many beds will that accommodate?
The cold weather is somewhere around 100 beds, and then the transitional housing, which will be open year-round, we're starting off with 32. If we fulfill the covenants on our grant from the state, we are in line for an additional $1 million. If we get the additional $1 million, which we have no reason to believe we won't, unless the legislature also steals that, we intend to add a dining facility and outfit the kitchen. I should tell you, this is another wonderful community participation. We've stubbed the kitchen, and because Memorial Hospital did a major renovation, they gave us all new appliances, well, new to us, appliances for the kitchen that were gently used over at Memorial during the renovation. So we'll be able to prepare the meals, serve the meals, and house about 100 to 125 in the cold weather shelter and about 30 in the transitional housing unit. The other thing we're going to have on site is a room for physicians and dentists who want to donate their services to screen people and refer them to medical care. And we're also providing a facility for law enforcement, Highway Patrol, Sheriff, and Modesto PD to come off the street, write their reports, and take care of paperwork, make phone calls. And we think it's a good setting to have a little bit of law enforcement available so the homeless community is not so fearful of law enforcement.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, we go down to the consent calendar. Is there any board member like to pull anything? Seeing nobody raise their hand, I need a motion.
A motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried 5-0. We have a 6:40 public hearing, I believe, and we'll start that right now. Here they come.
You're going to have to give us just a few minutes to get the PowerPoint set up.
Pardon me?
You're going to have to give us just a couple of minutes to get the PowerPoint set up.
Okay.
I'm Kirk Ford. I'm your interim planning director, and with me is Joshua Mann, an associate planner. And this evening we have a general plan amendment and rezone for the fruit yard out on Albers and Highway 132 and Yosemite.
Thank you, Director Ford. Good evening, Chair Mayfield, members of the board. Tonight, as Director Ford stated, we have a rezone application and general plan amendment application for the fruit yard, which is located on the southwest corner of Deer and Yosemite. The current general plan designation is Ag. The current zoning designation is A240. Here's an aerial photo shows the existing site outlined in red. The project basically is a three-phase development for the site. Phase one includes a 9,000 square foot banquet facility and outdoor events on the park site. Phase two consists of a 322 space RV boat storage, a 66 space travel trailer park, a 2-acre site for tractor sales, and a new facility for fruit packing. Phase three includes relocation of some existing fueling facilities and a 3,000 square foot retail shell building. The site plan here kind of breaks it down. The green would be phase one, the bluish color would be phase two, and the red is phase three. Here's some elevations the applicant has submitted for the banquet facility. He also wanted the flexibility to go with the existing architectural style of the buildings out there. Here's some conceptual landscaping plans of the banquet facility. And here's some conceptual sign elevations. The findings for a general plan amendment and rezone request are land use matters. In order to approve these, specific findings must be made. Analysis of these findings, as well as the applicant's evaluation, can be found in the attached Planning Commission staff report. A little bit of a site history is that the current facility is considered a legal nonconforming use. These uses have been altered and expanded throughout the years by way of use permit and staff approval permits. Although these current uses are not entirely consistent with the A2 zoning district, the uses have been in business at this location for many years and have shown that they can be compatible with the surrounding area. However, staff feels that the current plan development proposal is a lot larger than what would be compatible with the surrounding area. As discussed in the Planning Commission staff report, phases 2 and 3 have no real relationship to the existing on-site legal nonconforming uses or agricultural in general. Staff is concerned that a precedence would be set for allowing general plan amendments and rezones on neighboring ag properties for the development of commercial uses. Staff believes that the Phase 1 portion of this project is a logical extension of the established legal nonconforming uses, which would be the banquet facility tied to the existing restaurant and the outdoor events tied to the existing events at the park site. And this would be kind of a display of what Phase 1 would include with the access roads, driveways, etc. The Planning Commission recommended that the board approve this request by a 4-2 vote, allowing the development of phases 1, 2, and 3 subject to the modified development standards and development schedule as listed in the staff report. As part of this action tonight, staff is asking that the board modify development standard number 55 to reflect the following language, which addresses a masonry wall along the canal if the RV park is approved. If the board also decides to approve the RV park portion of this project, we're asking tonight that we add an additional condition that would address the length of stay at the RV park. Basically, you wouldn't be allowed to stay there more than 14 out of 30 days. And that concludes staff's presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Is there any questions of staff? Oh, nobody else is going to say. I might as well say something. You're right out in the middle with this 40 acres. You're right out in the middle of the ag zone. It's a non-conforming use what we've had for years, and I can live with the banquet part of it. They've had outdoor activities there for years. Okay, but the banquet, that's all right. But when you go out and right in the middle of ag land and you say you're going to change the zoning, what's going to happen to every neighbor out there? They're going to be back in here looking to change the zoning on their property. I think this is probably one of the worst plans I've seen in a long time. I've seen a few, but this is a bad one. Okay, right out in the middle of ag land. You want to change the zone, not you. I'm just complaining that they even got this far. So, no other discussion. Okay, then this is a public hearing. Okay, I'm going to open up to the public.
Good evening, Chairman. Members of the board, Dave Romano on behalf of the Fruit Yard. It's a great pleasure to be here before the board and to be representing Joe and Willie Traina. This facility is a recognized facility in the used by most members of the county, has been here and operated for over 30 years, has been in existence for substantially longer. The project really started off when the Trainas were approached by the county with respect to the Gear Road Highway 132 intersection project and the county's request for some right-of-way from the Trainas to develop this intersection. When we started to talk a little bit about the project, we realized that that would have a substantial impact on the gas station, how the gas station would operate, that some driveways would likely have to be closed. And so rather than take a short view, scrap with the county over the right-of-way, we decided to kind of take a long view. And so we spent about 6 or 8 months. We looked at the Fruit Yard. We looked at where we saw it going in the future, because we really wanted the county to see the full picture. We wanted this board to understand what the view was out there. And one of the challenges with the entitlement process is that every time we enter into this process for a new use, as a Fruit Yard has in the past, it takes a substantial amount of time, a substantial amount of money. So we wanted to make sure it was very clear where we hoped that this facility would go. The movement of the gas station off of the corner, which we felt would be a reality, resulted in the movement of the card lock, and so as we looked at the site, we really wanted to have a full and clear picture of where we were going. Traffic studies were prepared, reviewed by the Public Works Department, reviewed by Caltrans, the environmental documents prepared, everything was considered to be satisfactory. I want to tell this board, your Public Works Department was absolutely fantastic to work with. We were able to work with them closely throughout the intersection project to get it constructed on time. Driveways on the highway were constructed in the proper location. so that we can accommodate these projects, and we very much appreciate all of their assistance. This is a project that's really on the crossroads. It's between Turlock and Oakdale. It's between Modesto and Waterford. It's on the way to our Foothill Lakes. It's on the way to Yosemite. It's on the way to the Gold Country. And it's really established itself as a destination. So it is a unique location and identifiable to the public as an appropriate place to go. We appreciate staff's concern with regard to having some phasing. We originally brought it in as a one-phase project. We were asked to provide some phasing. We phased it a little bit. We thought that the gas station would be able to survive actually longer than it has, and it's really starting to get kind of depressed use, and so we think that it may actually have to be moved a little further forward. Your Planning Commission deliberated on this matter. They did a good job. They took it all to heart. They came to a decision to recommend to this board that this project be approved in its entirety. We ask the board to concur with that recommendation and approve this project, and we do want the board to know that we are in agreement with the conditions as proposed to be modified by staff. There's a new MID condition that your planning staff MID, and we worked very hard to make sure it was appropriate for all parties, and the second condition regarding the length of stay. We're certainly here to answer any questions the board may have. We appreciate everyone's hard work to help us get to this point, and we ask for your approval. So thank you very much, Chairman. We're here to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Can I ask, how long are you going to take to get to phase three? What's your time frame?
We had originally thought that the whole project would probably be about a 10-year project. We've identified kind of a 7-year phasing plan so that if we don't get it done in 7 years, we'll need to come back to the board and get an extension. So we kind of shortened up the time frame a little bit. So if we don't get it completed through a 7-year window, we'll need to come back to the board and ask for an extension and let you know why. But the phasing allows us, when we build early phases, to make sure that the wells are large enough, septic systems are large enough, roadway improvements are appropriate, so that when we get to the next phase, we've kind of properly sized those facilities. So,
and this driveway 8 and 9, that's, you know, right in the very beginning of the intersection, how long would it be before you close those off? I see the Planning Commission's giving you a little bit more time.
Yes, sir.
Although that doesn't really fit our county regulations.
Yes, Supervisor. Caltrans requested that we close driveway 6. County Public Works requested that we close driveway 7, and then we consolidated one other driveway along the highway to help the flow of traffic there. The condition is that those driveways have to be closed when we move the fuel station. So as long as the gas station remains as is and operational, none of those driveways will be moved. But as soon as that gas station moves, those two driveways closest to the intersection will be closed. Driveway 9 will be able to be changed to a right-in, right-out. And as 6 and 4 then kind of, I can't see exactly on the figure, I think 5 moves over a little bit. We basically reduce at that intersection a number of driveways, any left turning movements, so that intersection will operate much, much better. But the timing will be at relocation of the gas station.
And how long will that be?
We had felt it was going to be a little further out in the future, but we're actually, I've been told, down about 30% on the fuel since the intersection project. So we think that the gas station movement may occur a little sooner and may actually be in the first phase. And your Planning Commission gave the Planning Director authority, if we move that use up to an earlier phase, to grant that. So we think the gas station may result in the earliest movement out there just because of what we're seeing on the ground.
I'm just curious, I'm not familiar with these terms. What's a pork chop when they install that? What does that mean?
A pork chop is, it actually looks like a pork chop, and it's usually like a raised curve that only allows you to turn in right and go out right. And so it has kind of concrete curbs that when you come up to it, you can't make a left-hand turn. You can only make a right going out. It's just a feature that restricts left turns, and it's called a pork chop because of its shape.
Never heard that before.
Yeah, they teach you that in engineering school, pork chops.
You done?
Yeah, it's all for now.
Okay.
Yep.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to speak on this matter? Okay, if not, I'll bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few comments. I looked at this issue. This isn't my district, so I looked at this issue very closely. And it, you know, we denied a lot of other items that have become before this board. However, I think this is a unique situation that really doesn't set a precedent. First of all, we have a legal business, legal, wonderful business out there. Second, our street improvements impacted their business. And thirdly, they have a lot of, or not a lot, but very big community events out there, and I get no complaints on it. I don't think staff gets any complaints on it. This is just a very unique situation, and I don't think it sets a precedent, and I'm in favor of it.
Thank you. Yeah.
I believe the moving of the station on the corner and setting it up further over in front of Yosemite is just excellent. I think that is a safety factor. I also believe that you've been there for a number of years. I think the expansion totally will fit within the needs of the area. Yes, you are in agricultural area, but you've been there a number of years. You're also considered in putting a packing shed, which I don't believe you need permission to put in later on. But with the gas facilities, the parking facilities, and the recommendations which the Planning Commission made about the amount of time you could park your units there, I believe that was put in there. I believe with those recommendations, I'm in favor of this.
Okay. Other side?
I'm very familiar with the place. I used to live down the road when I was growing up. I remember when it was an old foamy little drive-in there, a little restaurant. Overall, you know, I'm not real favorable about things like this out in ag land, but in this case, this thing has been there for as long as I can remember. It's grown a little bit, but the only comment I could make was these driveways 8 and 6 really ought to be closed as soon as possible. If you move that up a little bit in your timeline, I think you'd be better off. I've been out there a number of times with antique car clubs and went to a Beach Boys concert out there one time. So it doesn't seem to cause a problem with the neighbors, and I know it's agriculture around it, but I can never recall a problem with it, so I'm okay with this, but the only suggestion I make is you just speed up the closing of those two driveways in the corner of Buren and Yosemite.
Yeah. I'm eagerly awaiting the supervisor from District 1's motion.
Oh, well, not yet. Not yet. Well, I'm going to be the only one opposed to it tonight. But I'll tell you what, because they've got RV parking, they've got they're going to have a tractor shop, okay, and then they threw in a little goodie, the packing shed. I think that's really far-fetched that they're going to do a packing shed. I wouldn't have any problem at all with the banquet room. But when you're going to go out there and take 38 or 40 acres, and you're going to put RV parking, you're going to put boat parking, you're going to put a banquet hall, which I don't oppose, okay, and you're going to make a tractor shop, and then you're going to put a packing shed up. Eventually, I won't be here, eventually somebody's going to complain about it. And they're going to come back to this board, and they're going to say, "I want to do the same thing." Well, I mean, if we're going to plan like this, if we're going to plan, and everybody wants to say, "Well, cut my 40 out," I think this is a bunch of bull. Okay, with a banquet hall, I can live with it, but the rest of it is totally against everything we've talked about. We've talked about saving ag land, we're saving this and saving that. This is totally the opposite of what we're doing. Now, the board is going to vote 4-1. I have no problem with that, but I'm sure not going to vote for it. Okay. You want to make a motion?
Motion to approve the staff modification.
Okay. Give me a second.
I'll second that.
Okay. Who did it?
Go ahead.
You okay.
I'll second
it. You going to second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Aye. Motion carried 4-1.
Thank you.
Okay, we go down to B8. Patty Hill Thomas, PowerPoint. Okay. Patty Hill, you're on.
We'll bring this up quickly. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Patty Hill Thomas from the Chief Executive Office. You'll see me twice here tonight. I'm very pleased for this first time to introduce to your board our effective partnership team, or reintroduce, and also to be part of the presentation of our second annual report on effective partnerships. This priority of your board is core to our organization. And while you see a select group of department heads as the champions of this, every one of our department heads, and in fact every one of our leaders and employees, is part of us being able to effectively partner with others to do the public's business. This priority is part of our core business sense. It guides how we act, how we behave, and how we perform. And it helps us, particularly in times of economic downturn, to be more innovative and creative when we have to do more with less. Someone, and we're not sure who that someone was, once said that coming together is a beginning, keeping together is progress, and working together is success. On that note, it's my pleasure to introduce to you our team, your team, on the effective partnership. Our team members are our auditor controller, Larry Haw, our Office of Emergency Services Deputy Director, Gary Henshaw, our Child Support Services Director, David Ingersoll, our Community Services Agency Director, Chris Applegate, and our Environmental Resources Director, Sonia Herrigfeld, and our librarian, Vanessa Zopak. And in addition, I'd like to give a special thanks to Christy Mellon on the CEO staff and Mark Lozier for their great support of this innovative team. I'd like to recognize and thank Supervisor Dick Monteith. He is our champion representing your board of the effective partnership team, and we appreciate his encouragement and his enthusiasm for this effort. So thank you, Supervisor. We have a motto, and we didn't just sit in a room with 6 or 7 or 8 people. We took this to a monthly department head meeting. We asked all our department heads to be part of what did we really feel the message and therefore the motto for effective partnerships would be in our organization, organization-wide. And it's pretty simple. Effective partnerships for a stronger community. With that, it is my pleasure to reintroduce you to David Ingersoll, our Director of Child Support Services, who will review with you our first goal. Thank you.
Actually, I'm going to introduce Vanessa.
Oops, sorry. I want to speak for a moment about why partnerships are important.
Pull that microphone close to you. That a girl.
The effective partnership priority is important because this board is committed to providing excellent community services and because our county departments must effectively manage dwindling public resources and encourage innovation and continuously improve business efficiencies. We are all faced with a series of great opportunities, often brilliantly disguised as impossible situations. The greatest benefit of annual partnership inventory is the discussion that occurs at the leadership level of any department regarding the status, the value, and the future of a partnership. The inventory is more than a mere list. It is a formal structure enabling departments to continuously review and discuss, to develop strategies and goals, to benchmark, and to make needed changes
in order to promote the public good. David?
Thank you, Vanessa. Partnerships are vital, and now more than ever, for all the reasons Vanessa said. And at its highest level, partnerships provide a mutual benefit. They're not just the best partnership money can buy, they're a mutual benefit, and they're greater than the sum of their parts. They truly are synergistic. We've divided this into two goals. The first goal is regarding new opportunities for partnerships, and we'll get to goal two, which is existing partnerships. We have evaluated new opportunities for effective partnerships, and that inventory and evaluation of new partnerships is found at the intranet site that is listed. And this is ongoing. It will continue to be done. We will continue to evaluate new partnerships. In addition, we will update the partnership database when we establish new opportunities for effective partnerships. This is also ongoing. In addition, we wanted to give training to departments so that they could use the database. And since the inception of this process, all the departments have been trained. So that is completed. In addition, another outcome that we have already completed is that your priorities are included during every new employee orientation. In addition, we have completed effective partnerships. Well, this is in progress. You'll see that the budget document in September will have this. Will have something in there regarding partnerships. In effect, there is right now in the June a tab, and there will be more. And effective partnerships will be highlighted. We also, and this is really the heart of the presentation and the heart of our proposal to you, is to establish an annual recognition event. This will highlight and encourage effective partnerships because people will want to be recognized. They'll want to find out what works with other partnerships so they can benchmark those. This is also in progress and is coming soon, hopefully. In the creation of this formal process, we have developed criteria. And this was a formal process, and it will be a meaningful way for departments to encourage and showcase their partnerships. In addition, as I mentioned before, we will be highlighting the best practices from one department so other departments can benchmark from those. It will also be a celebration and promote effective partnerships so that even though we already, I think, are very good at this, partnering with other agencies and the private sector as well, we'll be able to get better at it. The recognition criteria includes, first and foremost, alignment with the board's priorities. And how does this part of the question to be asked is, in terms of the criteria for this annual recognition event, is how does the partnership align with the Board of Supervisors' priorities? In terms of diversity, there are four questions that will be asked. What does each partner contribute to the success? As I mentioned, if it's just money, that may not be the very best partnership we can find. Are the key stakeholders involved in partnership? Does the partnership represent diverse viewpoints? And is the community engaged in it? Speaking of community, the next criteria involves the impact in the community. And we also have four questions that will be asked in this criteria. Does the partnership create a difference in the community we serve, which is really what we're all about, is making a difference? How has this project touched the lives of those in the community population that it's serving? What is the number of people reached or touched by the partnership, and is this an underserved population? And of course, we want measurable outcomes, because when you measure something, you focus on it. Under measurable outcomes, we have three criteria. Did the partnership accomplish the stated goals and objectives? Were the values compatible with the work completed? This county has a long history of having positive values. How has the partnership benefited the community? Because obviously, we want to benefit. In addition, under financial measures, we have two questions. Were funds leveraged or saved by working jointly? This is that synergistic effect I mentioned earlier. And were there savings realized due to the partnership? under Safe Community, we have a number of partnerships we're going to recognize. But before we go there, I want to very briefly talk about what we're proposing this committee be comprised of. We would have one member of the Board of Supervisors, one member from the business community, one member from the media, and two governmental representatives, cities, MACs, or special districts. So this would not be a case of just whether it be this team or other department heads saying, oh, we do good partnering. It would be external people who would truly judge what were good partnerships. And the supervisor would serve a two-year term, and all the other positions would be 1 year. And, of course, this is subject to your modification, whatever you think would be best. And we're going to just be naming a number of partnerships that we selected in each one of the board priorities. Under a safe community, you will see the American Red Cross and the Family and Domestic Violence Coordinating Council. Under healthy community, the Children's Crisis Center and Advancing Vibrant Communities. Under strong local economy, Community Friends of the Library and the Convention and Visitors Bureaus. And a strong local economy. Under a strong agricultural economy, Heritage, 4-H, and the Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, and the University of California Cooperative Extension. You got three in there, not two. Under well-planned infrastructure, Weed and Seed, and Habitat for Humanity. Under efficient delivery of public services, the League of Women Voters and the Volunteer Center of the United Way. The second goal is primarily the same thing we've gone through, only what we talked about already was new partnerships. This is existing partnerships. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to have these PowerPoint slides scroll through. And this one, I did want to mention something about that we'll evaluate 50% of the existing partnerships. And that is ongoing. We will continue to evaluate 50% of existing partnerships till they all get evaluated. This one, as I mentioned, was completed. This one was also completed, the training. The new employee orientation was also completed, but that's ongoing. Every new employee will continue to get that orientation on board priorities. And the budget document is in progress. We've already talked in detail about the annual recognition event. That, of course, is in progress. When it comes to lessons learned, the ongoing partnership database training. We have learned that we needed to do a better job communicating to all the department heads how important it is to stay on top of this, because they develop new partnerships, could be even every other day, every month, every week. So we are going to continue to communicate that, and we have developed, and it is completed, an online training tutorial. The annual recognition event we have discovered would be, we believe, and that's why we're recommending it to you, a way to highlight these partnerships and also invite people and encourage people to participate in partnerships. And this will promote even more effective partnerships. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Vanessa. Thank you very much.
In conclusion, we'd like to say that partnership is a vital value to our organization now more than ever. And Dave and I offer our sincere thanks to all of the departments on this priority team, and also for the input that we received from the other county departments, especially the department heads. We'd like to also offer our thanks to our advisor, Supervisor Monteith, and to the board for its support, and to Patty Hill Thomas, Christy Neller, and Mark Lozier for their valuable assistance. And we were very pleased to be able to address this priority for the board.
Is that it? Okay. Thank you all. You've all formed a great partnership. We've covered, but just by looking out there, I can see fire. I can see all different organizations that were working into this this thing. I expect great things of you, all of you, when you come together and come back to us and tell us these things that you've... Oh, Dick, you're going to tell me anyhow. Okay. Okay, go ahead, Dick. Tell me what they're going to accomplish.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the partnership for allowing me to be involved. You know, partnerships, there are all kinds of partnerships, but there are those that work and those that do not. And one of the categories in that area is when people work together who want to make it work. That's a tremendous asset. You can have some very talented people in a room and work together, but it just doesn't gel because there isn't that, as I call, an inner glow of wanting it to work and addressing the challenges. You know, partnerships can be easy when things are good. And as we all know that we have our challenges today, and that to step in and get involved in a partnership during the difficult time shows the want-to ability, shows the talents that you have, and shows the character that you have in wanting to make Stanislaus County the best county we possibly can make it. So again, I know the challenges are great, but I want to thank you once again, everyone involved, and it's a pleasure to work with those who believe in Stanislaus County and are working to make Stanislaus County the best possible county we can have. So thank you once again.
Okay, Bill, you got something you want to...
Real quick, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I just wanted to reiterate a couple things that a couple speakers said, and how important partnerships are right now, especially in the tough economic and times that we have, even here in county government with money. I wanted to stretch your definition of partnership a little bit, and there's a great examples of different organizations, but I want to stretch the partnership into other governments. Typically, government is very territorial, and we have our program, and the city has their program. But I just want to challenge you to keep looking for those partnerships. Great one is the sheriff decentralization. Here's northeast area of the county is going first, and here's an area where Riverbank's going to get a lot more deputies from the sheriff's department into the city of Riverbank, but they're going to take care of the entire northeast area of the county. County residents benefit, we'll get faster response times. City residents benefit. Sheriff needs more space, City of Riverbank has it. It's an effective partnership that's going to work and everybody's going to benefit from it. And the general public wants to see government working together and get rid of all these territories that we all have. And so just wanted to thank you for your presentation and congratulate on what you've accomplished so far.
Okay, I've already asked this side, they don't want to say anything. Okay, so I thank you all for the previous presentation tonight. Okay, Patty, you got something else tonight?
We need the motion to accept.
Huh? We have to accept the report? Okay, we need a motion.
So move.
Okay, it's over here, a motion by Dick and second by Bill. All in favor, wait a minute, Patty. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, carried 5-0. Okay, now you're on.
Good evening again, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'd like to draw your attention to the screen, and then we'll begin our speaking presentation.
You're going to be talking about a healthy community?
In just
okay.
No. Thank you. It's our pleasure tonight to present to you our second annual report for the Healthy Community Priority Group. It is also a real pleasure to introduce or reintroduce to you our priority team and thank them for what they do. Margie Palomino, our Director of Aging and Veteran Services. Denise Hunt, our Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. David Ingersoll, again, our Director of Child Support Services. Christine Applegate, our Community Services Agency Director. And Marianne Lee, our Health Services Agency Director. A very special and sincere thank you to our board priority advisors. I believe they have a full-time job just serving as your board's health executive committee, Chairman Mayfield and Supervisor Grover, in addition to acting on your board's behalf on many of the priority and policy issues in our health services agency. They've also served as a great sounding board and advisors to the Healthy Priority Group. So on behalf of our entire team, we'd like to thank you for that. And a very special thank you again to Christine Ellen for her great work, to Cynthia Tomlinson behind me for her great and continued work, and Ms. Kim Martinez, who's at the table, who's magnificent at taking our words and our thoughts and our visions and putting them into presentations that really speak from the heart. So thank you all. There are a lot of facts about the community's need to be healthy, and there are a lot of resources tied up in meeting that need. But in this case, and let's go ahead, Kim, there is one very simple but vital and significant goal, and that is access to services that promote health, self-sufficiency, accountability, protection, and independence. In this area of county government alone, we have over 2,200 employees working full-time, day and night, to serve the community's healthy community needs. The budget portion of our nearly $1 billion county budget for providing these services is nearly $0.5 billion, just short of $500 million. And the county's general fund contribution, or local dollars that support our social and health programs, exceeds $20 million. And through the variety of services, from serving seniors and veterans to children to disabled population, the indigent population, and beyond, this is certainly one of your board priorities, and there are others, that touches virtually every resident in our community in one way or another. Our team members will next go through our measures for that one significant goal, and we'll also be highlighting again on the screen, through the words of our customers, some of the outcomes that we're experiencing through your leadership and our dedication to your board's priority of a healthy community. So with that, I think we're going to go to Marianne Lee next, and then we'll go to the screen. So I thank you again. Good evening. I'm going to speak to you about access to services that promote health. In our team, we had 5 expected outcomes in this area, and I'm pleased to report that we met all of the expected outcomes. I'm going to briefly mention each one and then spend a little bit of time highlighting the final one. First of all, 100% of the pregnant women that were identified through the Healthy Birth Outcomes Program were referred for prenatal care, and if they were uninsured, they were referred for the Medi-Cal or Healthy Families Program. The lesson learned on that particular outcome is that it was probably not tough enough, and as a result, we have modified that outcome for future periods. Next, we wanted to increase participation in the Healthy Aging Summit. During this past year, the 5th annual summit was held, and about 1,300 seniors and veterans were served, including 800 free health screenings. Next, we exceeded our goal of the individuals to be served through the Mental Health Full Service Partnership Programs. We served approximately 6,000 individuals. At CSA, Medi-Cal applications are processed in less than 30 days. That was our goal. It is averaging at about 21 days, which is well below the state requirement. And if I could just add, this is good for a couple of reasons. One, we know that people are more apt to seek needed health care if they have coverage. And then for providers like HSA, it's good because we have somebody to bill for services.
And then finally, and that which I wanted to talk a little bit more about, is the federally qualified health center look-alike designation. This outcome is really about decreasing our operating losses at HSA in order to preserve the clinic system, which preserves access to health. It's important because about 15% of our community rely on the health services agency clinics for some or all of their health care needs. I would say that it was the single most important effort last year because the FQ designation is bringing on an annual basis about $7 million additional dollars to the clinic system. The picture before you I really like. It was taken at the Paradise Medical Office, and we're essentially celebrating the FQ designation. But I like it because it also, I think, shows what it took to achieve that designation. Pictured are a number of our community health center board members, many of whom are patients of the clinic system that are volunteering to help make us better at serving the community. Certainly took the support of the Board of Supervisors, of HSA staff, CEO office staff, CSA, and of course the doctors at Health Services Agency as well. I'm pleased to report tonight that because of the FQ and other strategic initiatives that you've heard a lot about during the past year, we're finalizing our figures, but it appears that even with the projections for 07-08 that we had made based on the FQ and the initiatives, we are beating that forecast probably to the tune of about $1 million. So we're very pleased to report that to you, that in terms of that expected outcome, we have come a long way to achieve a more financially stable clinic system. In terms of lessons learned, again, our team met all the outcomes in this area, but we really can only celebrate for just a moment, and then we have to get back to work because the challenges are going to continue. Many of our programs are based on state and federal funding, and we know what that picture looks like. So we have to continue to be collaborative and creative in order to continue to work to preserve access to health. And I'll stop now and turn it to Margie Palomino.
Good evening. I will be addressing Measure 2, Promote Self-Sufficiency. Given the current economic situation in the county, it is critical that we spend our resources developing programs that allow our citizens to rely less on government assistance and to help them become more self-sufficient. For this reason, the Healthy Community team has been working very diligently in meeting the following outcome measures. The Veterans Services Division filed almost 2,000 claims on behalf of veterans and their dependents. This is almost double the original goal of 1,200 claims. The amount of cash benefits that these types of claims provide to our veterans on a yearly basis is almost $10 million. These are dollars spent in our county. The work participation rate only increased slightly. It went from 15% to 17.5%. The reason the goal of reaching a 30% increase was not obtained was because of current economy and because of the stricter federal rules. It is worth mentioning at this time that even though many customers do participate and meet the state program requirements, in fact, the engagement rate is almost at 40%. These activities, unfortunately, cannot be included in the rate calculation because they are not reaching the 30 hours required by the federal standards. The Community Services Agency funds family resource centers throughout the county. Through these centers, over 5,000 caregivers receive family support and parent education services. 85% of the children were enrolled in health insurance programs, and 76% of pregnant women without insurance were referred to a health care provider. For the last 3 years, the Area Agency on Aging and the Howard Training Center, the provider of the meals program, have been focusing on increasing participation in the home delivery meals program. As the senior population continues to increase, more and more seniors are living longer. for a lot of the seniors, it's sometimes impossible to continue their independence unless they can rely on programs such as the home delivery program. Seniors lose their mobility, they become frail, and unless we have programs such as the home delivery meal program, they're not able to stay home in independence. Even though we have been very successful in increasing participation in this particular program, what we have learned is that we have come to the point where the demand for services is a lot higher than the resources available. Since we know there will be an increase in federal and state funding for this to meet the demand for the service, and because of the fuel and food costs will continue to increase, until we are able to identify additional resources to fund this program, we will have to maintain a waiting list for the home delivery program.
This is a vital program for those homebound elderly for whom shopping and cooking is a hardship. The program drivers provide much more than a meal. Their friendly greeting and their reassuring smile provides a sense of security day after day for some otherwise isolated and vulnerable people.
Oh, yes. Goodness. Very good. Oh, my goodness, I think of her as my sister. I love her to pieces. She's a very, very sweet person. Very sweet person.
And I'm here to talk about Measure 3, promoting accountability. Under this, we had six expected outcomes, and the first was in collecting and distributing child support. Our expected outcome was to collect and distribute 47.35 million to 35,000 families, and I'm happy to say, primarily actually because of the intercept of the economic stimulus package, which may or may not be a one-time event, we'll see, we were actually able to exceed that and reach $47.5 million. The next was to increase the amount of benefits discontinued or denied as a result of fraud investigations. And the outcome on that was we were looking for $4.5 million, and for the first 10 months, we reached $2.865 million with a final year, July 08, of $3.4 million. On Measure 3, promoting accountability of collecting 50% of the current child support ordered, I'm proud to say that we did exceed that. We reached 53.85%, and we expect to be able to maintain that, depending, of course, on funding again. And the next one, 80% of child support cases that need a judgment, in other words, there's no order to pay, will have an order. On that, we far exceeded that, and we reached 85%. And we hope, once again, we should be able to maintain that based on funding. And if paternity is at issue, in other words, these children are born out of wedlock, we actually have to get an order, a judgment establishing paternity. Our target was 90%, and in that, we actually reached 95%. And in cases with child support arrears, we are shooting for 55% of those cases to have a collection, and we just squeaked by on that one. We hit 56%. In terms of lessons learned, what we learned first was, and I already mentioned this twice, I think, that the economic stimulus package was essential to us meeting the total collections. And if that doesn't happen again, because of the economy, because of the foreclosures, because of the unemployment rate, we will struggle to reach $47 million. In addition, as I think you probably all recall from the June budget meeting, we are also facing reductions in force, and collecting child support is very labor intensive. The new computer is helpful, but it is not the end-all be-all of collecting child support. You need human beings to do that. In terms of the welfare fraud situation, first I want to mention and want to emphasize, in fact, that welfare fraud is not just the CSA, Community Services Agency, concern. Child Support Services makes referrals on these for many reasons. One might be that the absent parent is in the home and
that they've been reported the person is not in the home. Another may be that the mother denies knowing who the father is, that the father is actually living in the home, and the genetic test will prove that that person is actually the father. Another is underreported income. The numbers they report to welfare don't match the numbers they file on their tax returns, and none of them match the numbers they file with the court in order to not pay any child support. Another reason we make referrals, and probably the most common reason, is the parent that we're seeking support from says, why are you asking support from me? The child's been living with me for the last year, whereas the other parent's been collecting or attempting to collect TANF, temporary assistance to needy families, even though the child isn't with them. So welfare fraud is a concern more than just the CSA, but DESL as well. And part of the problem that we had in meeting that goal was because of vacancy rates. There's a difficulty in hiring the people we needed to have there. And also, this position requires lengthy training. It's not something you hire someone as a welfare fraud investigator and the next day you turn them loose on the street. And then we have a true story we'd like to share with you.
Recently, the Stanislaus County Department of Child Support Services was contacted by a local title company because a real estate property lien had been identified during a title search on an absent parent's home. The county's lien was for the full balance of past due child support and interest, totaling more than $97,800. Since the family was now residing in another state, we contacted that state's child support office. The funds were released, with $684 reimbursing the other state's balances, and the remaining funds went directly to the family. A few days later, the other state contacted our office to tell us they'd spoken with the custodial parent. They had let her know the check was ready to be picked up. The custodial parent was so overwhelmed and close to tears. You see, just the week before, her house had been destroyed by a fire. She and the children were living in a hotel and had nothing. This money was going to make the difference and get them back on the road to recovery.
Hello, I'm going to be presenting on Measure 4, which is promoting protection. On this healthy community goal was to promote protection within the community, and it focuses on measures to protect children, elders, and dependent adults from abuse, neglect, or exploitation, as well as protecting the community from disease, drug abuse, and its consequences, and it also focused on good preparation to address emergencies and disasters. I'm going to shortly review the four outcomes and then just highlight one in particular. In this area, one of our measures was to plan and conduct one emergency preparedness exercise, and it focused on mass vaccination. And in October of 2007, we saw a very successful exercise with 2,700 vaccinations delivered during the course of the exercise. And through that, we learned we needed to improve areas of radio communication and staff rotation during such an exercise. The next one we had was increasing the outreach efforts and participation in the Stanislaus Elder Abuse Prevention Alliance. This was to educate the community about elder abuse and try to get community involved in this area. And the Stanislaus Elder Abuse Prevention Alliance, or SEPA, did 52 presentations in through March of 2008 and focused mainly on elder abuse mandated reporting and on information referral regarding elder abuse. They also did just general presentations, and in that time frame, they had 6,686 participants that came from the community. Another one of our measures was establishing a community methamphetamine task force. And in this one, we were able to establish that task force, which involves regional representatives from health, social services, law enforcement, and educational agencies to address methamphetamine efforts throughout the county, or rather methamphetamine prevention efforts throughout the county, and to gather impact data assessment information. The meth task force was convened on January 24th in 2008, and the impact data assessment began in February of 2008, and quarterly meetings are continuing with that group. The last one I want to highlight is the one I want to talk a little more about, which is maintaining twice the state rate average for adoptions within 24 months of placement. And the reason that this one is important is that our county is very highly ranked within the state in terms of the quickness with which we are able to place children for adoption once they are in the position to be adopted and they're no longer going to be reunified with their parents. We currently maintain an average that is 32.6% above the state average, and again, this shows how quickly we move to get children into permanent homes. One of the things that's a challenge is when we're dealing with children, especially older children or sibling groups, it's sometimes hard to find placements for those children, but we move quickly on trying to place all children. Also, of course, another one of these challenges you've heard about in all of these areas is decreasing federal and state funding to support these various efforts. One of the things that we're proud about, though, is the philosophy of our adoption program in this county is that every child deserves a forever home, a permanent home where they will be until they grow up, and some connection for their lifelong connection with a family. Permanency is a value that is shown both in the law and in our practice in our agency, and this is either done through reunification with birth parents whenever possible, or providing relative guardianship or adoption to provide stability and permanency for children as they grow up. One of the reasons we're successful at this is that the CSA here in Stanislaus County does their own adoption cases. In many counties, they work with state adoption, so you have two agencies involved. Here, it's all done through our one agency at the county level. And we're able to use concurrent planning, which means that when a child enters our system and is placed into a foster home, that foster home is evaluated to be a permanent placement. So if the reunification with the parents fail, they're able to stay with that relative or that foster placement to have a permanent home while they grow up. The lessons we've learned on this particular outcome is that children growing up in a stable, safe, forever home obviously do better than children in long-term foster care, and this adoption is much more cost-effective to public resources than keeping children in long-term care. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Denise Hunt.
Good evening. The last measure of our goal of a healthy community involves promoting independence for Stanislaus County residents because we understand that in order to establish and maintain health, we absolutely need to support people's independence. The first expected outcome for last fiscal year involved increasing employment for behavioral health and recovery services clients served by two types of programming. Unfortunately, employment rates for these individuals targeted in this outcome actually fell during the last fiscal year. The main reason for that being that about 3 months after we established that target, the state defunded most of the services for those individuals. And I'll return to that issue at the end of the presentation. The next outcome we aimed for was to increase the number of youth coming out of foster care who received transitional housing support in order to become independent. We aimed for a 30% increase, and we achieved a 50% increase here. Our group wanted to increase awareness of available senior services in our community. Between SEPA, the Elder Abuse Prevention Alliance, and the Area Agency on Aging staff and Commission on Aging members, well over 6,700 individuals in the county attended events or presentations about senior services. And last, we exceeded our target of decreasing homelessness for individuals served by our adult BHRS programs by over 50%. We actually achieved a 56.5% total decrease in homelessness. And those are third quarter numbers, so I expect it's actually a little bit higher when we complete our data gathering. And we're going to show you a brief video.
My name is Larry Hayes. I'm a 58-year-old African-American male. And I live in West Modesto, with the West Modesto King Candidate Collaborative. Yes, I did receive some services from Behavior Health. I was in the SLC program over in Syria's on Richland Avenue. And I spent 40 days there in the COT unit, which is co-occurring therapy, which is for us who have not only just have a drug problem, but we also have a mental problem. Well, in the beginning, I was a crack smoker who spent every dollar he had on crack cocaine, you know, and it was such a situation that I couldn't even put a roof over our head. We stayed up on the rooftop. We slept in bushes. Sometimes I would get us a room. For once in my life, I was clean when two of my grandkids was born. My grandkids loved to be around me. My kids are ecstatic that Dad has pulled his life together. But like I explained to him, it wasn't something I did by myself. I had a lot of people behind me. I listened to my creator, you know, and it's I don't know. This is awesome to me because I never thought that I could get off of crack cocaine. I figured that's where I was going to die at, you know. And this is a life-saving situation if we want it, and I wanted it. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
In conclusion, the Healthy Priority team really gained an appreciation of a few things along the way over the past year. First of all, our experience underscored the fact that we were aware of, certainly, but that the vast majority of services in this priority group are funded by state and federal sources. The revenues that support our services largely flow into Stanislaus County from the outside. And like the employment program that I mentioned early on that was defunded, our outcomes are often dependent upon funding decisions that are not within Stanislaus County control. But I think more importantly, we learned, or my four colleagues and I, as we spoke about projects and activities tonight, many of them are outside of our respective department's scopes of responsibility, and we really understand that we can't achieve a healthy community by standing alone, only by working in partnership with one another, being flexible, and working with our community can we achieve the goal of a healthy community together. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Who wants, does someone want to say something on this side?
I'd like to say something.
Okay, on this side, okay.
Okay. Change it up a little bit on you.
Okay, that's fine.
I think the motive of this effort for all the different organizations or groups that have been working on it is to ensure that for the money we're receiving, and it's an ebb and flow, particularly with what we're providing, the services we're providing here, is to make sure that for the money we're receiving, we're maximizing the service that's going out. For this particular group, I think maybe more than some of the other ones, the reason that you work for government, the reason that you chose the professions that you're in is because you wanted to serve people. The cycle that we're in right now is a difficult one because the last 3 or 4 years, to varying degrees, has been a declining cycle. And I think it speaks to the professionalism of the group that sits in front of us that the level of service has continued to be high and in many cases has grown as we've witnessed here tonight. I think that speaks really well for Stanislaus County and the service you're providing in these areas. And I think that we'd be hard-pressed to get the level of service that we're getting anywhere else. And it's been a privilege to work with you. I'm particularly happy to find out that maybe we've got a bit of a tourniquet on this red ink in Health Services Agency, and it positions us well for when we get to the other side of the cycle and start growing again. So thank you for your efforts.
Okay, thank you. With that, we need to accept this report. I move approval.
You move approval. How about you, Jimmy? Will second it?
I second it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Moves and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carried 5-0. Thank you all. We go down to correspondence.
This board has received a notice from the State of California Fish and Game Commission regarding a proposed emergency regulatory action designating the long fin smelt as a threatened or endangered species.
We're going to refer this to Department of Planning and Community Development, Department of Public Works and the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received letters from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Small Business Administration's declaration of Stanislaus County as a contiguous county to Alameda County as a disaster area due to the agriculture losses caused by drought and abnormal cold weather that occurred March 8, 2008 through June 17, 2008.
We're going to refer this to the Agricultural Commissioner, Sealer, Weights and Measures, and the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from Congressman Nunes and Costa regarding a meeting on Thursday, August 21st, 2008, in Fresno on the topic of the need to improve State Route 99.
Refer this to the Department of Public Works, the Chief Executive Office, and the Stanislaus Council of Governments.
This board has received a letter from the State Department of Toxic Substances Control requesting input on an environmental investigation at the Modesto Junior College West Campus on 2201 Blue Gum Avenue in Modesto, California, on a former military installation known as Hammond General Hospital.
Refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a letter from Senator Cogdell clarifying his position on borrowing from Proposition 1A and Proposition 42.
Refer this to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a notice from the State Water Resources Control Board regarding the temporary transfer of water from the San Luis Reservoir to Fresno County due to the severe water shortages in the Central Valley.
Refer to the Agriculture Commissioner and Seer of Waste and Measures.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Is there any Board of Supervisors reports?
Please.
Okay, Dick's got one for us tonight.
On August 5th, which was National Night Out, many celebrations were held all over Stanislaus County. I was invited to attend at the Oregon Park, which was hosted by the airport neighbor United. And it was very nice to see the participation of the neighborhood. The sheriff's department had a mounted officer there, which all the young people were looking at the horse, and they had their hot dogs, and everybody had a great time. But one thing that impressed me so much was that the deputy sheriff, Tom Mobes, was praised by everybody out there. He was just not serving the community, but there's no question that he was accepted and part of the community and providing service. So I definitely want to praise and thank Deputy Tom Mobes for the job and the services he's doing.
Thank you, Dick. DeMartini, you got one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to report that the Westside Healthcare Task Force has been meeting now for just a little over a year, and we continue to make steady progress on the west side to try and bring some medical services to that area of the community. It's a collaborative effort between Stanislaus and Merced County, the cities of Newman, Patterson, and Gustine, along with all the health care providers in the entire district. This last week, from the Chief Executive Office, Keith Boggs and I, along with the County Council, Mark Hartley, did have a meeting with Emanuel Hospital. It was a very good meeting, and they offered their assistance in seeing if they could help us get something established there. And on Friday, the same group of us are going to have a meeting with Doctors Medical and to see if we can get their support also.
Bill, you got one for us? Okay. Legislative Fiscal and Management Report from our Chief Executive Officer.
It's just a couple items. First is an announcement and a reminder that on August 29th, we will have what is in fact a very historic groundbreaking on SR-219 Kiernan for the improvements that will occur along that corridor, which hopefully at one some point in time in the future will be our North County corridor. But a very important time as we develop improved transportation systems. But I'd also like to report that the Assembly did over the weekend on Sunday vote on the budget. It did go down 40 on a vote of 45 to 30. We're expecting that the Senate will take up a vote tomorrow. And right now we're kind of expecting the same outcome. There is an alternative proposal that is much more onerous in its nature, and it's being termed Plan B by legislative leadership, which would include taking funds from Prop 1A, Prop 42, Prop 63, Prop 10, and raiding any other special revenue and set aside funds in order to balance the budget using essentially one-time revenues and non-state revenues for a one-time state budget solution. We don't know what the outcome of that is going to be, but by the weekend we'll have a pretty clear indication of whether the legislative leadership will be successful at fashioning something that will survive a two-thirds vote.
Is that it? Okay. I don't have a report, but over the weekend when they had that big get together up at the Capitol, and they were all gonna be fixed up, and everything's gonna be great. One Democrat didn't go along with the Democrats. So today they kicked her out of her office, and she went across the street. If there was ever a bunch of hypocritical people and I've ever seen is that if you don't vote, whether you're with the Republicans or with the Democrats, they throw you out of the building. You know, these people are elected by the people. They have a right to sit in that office just like anybody else. This is just my take on it. I think that's terrible. I think we've got to the point that when we send somebody to Sacramento, that if you don't vote the way the people want you to vote, they can throw you out of the office. That is terrible. I'm never going to go there, so I don't have to worry about it. They throw me out the first day.
You're not going to do that to us, then.
Pardon me?
You're not going to do that to
us. No, not me. So anyway, that's it for the night. You got my take on politics. Okay. Good night, everybody. We're closed.